Hey, Slingers, welcome to another Friday of the Word Slinger podcast. It's a new week, new format. If you didn't hear Wednesday's episode, go back. Go back. You've come too far. But I've got a great interview today with Michael Bunker, so stick around. We're going to get to that next.
It's the Word Slinger podcast, where story matters. Build your brand. Write your book. Redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger, and this is indeed another special Friday episode. Fridays are my interview episodes now. So I don't know how long this will last, but so far I'm kind of digging it. It's not actually that much more work to produce two episodes, so we're gonna kind of run with this for a while, see what happens. So today I am chatting with Michael Bunker, good friend of mine. Really love this guy. He was on the show way back in episode 98. So if you want to hear that episode, you're gonna go hop over to wordslingerpodcast.com. There's a little search box on the right-hand side. If you kind of scroll down a little, there's like my archives. And you can search for Michael Bunker in that, and it'll bring up. Interestingly enough, it's going to bring up probably this episode and now and episode 98 and an interview with Mr. Monk, John Monk. All great interviews. But go check that out because it was an interesting interview last time. But this time we are talking about his the film deal that he got for his book Pennsylvania, which is, as I described in an interview, it is Witness meets The Martian. So it's about an Amish guy in space, he's landed a great deal, great movie deal for it, great producer attached, still in the early stages of production, but it's been announced for 2020, so that's very encouraging. And it's just been kind of interesting to watch that unfold. So we got a chance to talk to Michael about that and some other things. He and I are also making a little announcement in this episode. So you're going to listen through to the end for that. And why wait? Let's jump right in. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Michael Bunker. And stick around after for whatever I have to say. It's a whole new world. Who knows what I'm going to say afterwards. So I'll see you on the other side. Hey, thanks for tuning in to another week of the Word Slinger podcast. Today, I got a very special guest. This is a guy who's become a really good friend of mine. I don't know how he feels about this. He's become a really good friend of mine. Going his way. He's actually a former guest on the show. If you roll back way back to Word Slinger Podcast episode 98, what would Michael Bunker do?
That's right.
I love having return guests, man. So welcome, Michael Bunker. We're going to find out exactly what you did in the intervening years, man. Welcome to the show.
Hey,
welcome,
man.
Back.
Kevin, I am so happy to be back. Episode 98, man. That was back in the day. That was old school.
That's nearly 100 episodes ago.
Wow.
It may be 100 episodes ago by the time this goes live. So,
well, you know,
be my centennial guest.
That's right. Well, I have a record of trying to double the audience.
Yes.
So if I did that at 98, then I have to double that audience. It's going to be huge.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to have four listeners.
I can't do four. I might be able to do
four. No, let's not push things. let's keep this within the realm of possibility.
That's right.
Man, you've had some exciting stuff happening since the last time. I mean, last time we talked about your work. We talked about the stuff you had going on at the time. I think you were pushing Hell in the Sea over practically everything. So how'd that turn out?
It still hasn't. Yeah. I'm three chapters for being done, and what happened with that one was, as part of that story, I had not been to New Orleans since 2001, so I hadn't even been there since Katrina, And so then I had to arrange this past October to go to New Orleans so I could take a bunch of notes. So I now have everything ready.
That's cool.
But as that happened, the stuff we're going to talk about, a lot of other stuff started happening. So
we should jump. We're going to jump right to the juicy bits because you've had some really good news on the side of I don't know how to refer to this adaptation. We'll say for one of your books. So your book Pennsylvania is now being it's slated for 2020 according to IMDb.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It turned into a film. What can you tell us, man? What can you tell us about that?
Motion picture. So we sold film option for Pennsylvania in November of 2015, which seems like forever ago.
Yeah. And
it's a very, very long, slow, torturous process about which I will one day write a book. So that was in 2015, and there's been a lot of fits and starts. At one time, I was writing the screenplay for the book, and then I wrote a TV pilot script. I was fired. All of these we'll get into, but I was fired as the screenwriter, and which was a good news too. And then one of the things you learn in this whole process of making a novel into a film is you learn a lot about Hollywood, and I have learned more. See, I watched some Roger Altman films and things, and I thought I knew something about Hollywood, but it's crazier than you can possibly imagine.
And
I've learned so much about it. But one of the things is that nobody does anything that isn't contingent. And so if you can imagine, if you went down to buy a car, and instead of the credit check or whatever, they just said, hey, we would love to sell you this car, but we're going to need to have somebody that has four roses in their front yard right now. And so as soon as you can prove that to us, so you drive around, you find someone that's got four roses in their yard.
Right.
And I take a picture of these four roses, and they're like, would love to let you do that. But I tell you what, if you can find us somebody that will allow us to dump four tons of gravel into their driveway. So it's this big long circle that just, and it's like musical chairs.
Yeah.
And so everybody's excited. Everybody wants to do the project, but nobody wants to ever do anything that's not contingent. So, so that goes on for 3.5 years, and you're just looking for that one person anywhere in the supply chain that'll go, oh yeah, let's just do that. So, that step finally happened in April of this year, where we actually had Patrick Totopoulos, the world famous production designer, did production design for the 300 Stargate. I think going back, special effects for Independence Day. He did Underworld, Rise of the Lycans.
Yeah.
I tell you what, you could just go down the list. my daughter was babysitting, and they had the big TV, you know, up on the wall, and they had the apps where you could go through all the movies. And there was the panel of movies, and just what happened to show up there, he had done like 12 of 24 of the movies that were as either production designer or director.
Right.
That quality. So he was the first one that just got passionate about it and jumped into the project. And that really got things boiling here in the last month and a half. So we've got a script that should be finished in the next week or two. I'm looking forward to reading the finished script. I read some early versions of the script.
Yeah.
And they are attaching actors as we speak.
And I was telling you before the call that I keep refreshing IMDb to see if anybody gets attached to this. And I have an alert I set because I have IMDb Pro.
Right.
So set an alert on your movie.
Right.
So that anytime there was an update, I would get an update.
The thing about the attaching in general, so whether it's attaching a director or attaching an actor, is that it's that whole thing that everything's always contingent. So, say, hey, I love the script. I love this. I want to do this project. Who else do you have attached?
Right.
So, get somebody else that's of this level or whatever, A-list actor, and then I would love to do it. And
right.
So it's always that. And so the other day, the producer met with some financiers. This was just like 2 days ago. She just got back from Cannes, or Ken, however you say it, the city in France where they had the movies. And she said, you know, I'm meeting with these financial people who have financed the last two movies we did. Yeah. So I'm going to meet with them. We're going to talk about Pennsylvania. So she talked with them, and they had read an earlier version of the script, and they said, "Oh, we love it. We want to do it. We just want to see the final version of the script, and we're on board." So now you got there's this one more contingent thing. Well, in the meantime, you know, you're sending this script off to actors, right? And you're hoping they'll commit. So there never is a final script,
right?
The one that's the final script is the one that gets made that's in the can, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's not even final while they're shooting.
Like, pages coming out while they're shooting.
Yeah. They'll do reshoots after the edit is finished.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's really frustrating for storytellers.
and it stretches beyond that. So, you know.
Well, how do you feel about it, though? Are you nervous at all that they're going to? Because one of my big hangups, so everybody always asks me, would you be excited about a film, you know, based on one of your books? And the answer is yes and no, because I've been in film and TV. I know that things can go sideways. And there's always that scenario, like, I call it the Bonfire of the Vanities scenario, where you had a number one best-selling book everybody loved, but then the movie was horrible, and now the book is radioactive.
Oh yeah.
You know, do you worry about anything like that?
I don't. Mainly just because I guess when you when you're a writer, or at least me, I'm going to speak about me. I'm always on to the next thing. So after Pennsylvania was done, I knew that I was going to write a sequel to it, but intellectually and mentally, I'd moved on to other books.
Yeah.
And so when I wrote the book was published in April 2014. They bought the option in November 2015. So I had really moved on and started working on other projects. So it's almost like a dream world where someone says, "Oh, well, what if the movie comes out and it's horrible, and then they hate the book?" Well, I guess I'll just go write another book. It's worst things can happen, you know.
Luckily, the people never remember who the author was for the book that the movie was based on.
Yeah, and if this was a To Kill a Mockingbird level success story as far as the book, I would probably be a lot more nervous. Yeah. I mean, it was very successful. The book sold 100,000 copies, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
But it was not To Kill a Mockingbird. So I don't think they're going to be talking about this book. Maybe talk about the movies, maybe. 50 years from now, but I don't think anybody's going to be saying, I don't think they're going to be reading me in the ninth grade.
Hey, you never know, man.
Well, maybe not that. Hopefully a different one.
If they have kids reading The Giver, they'll read that, which I like, by the way. But I mean, there's an opportunity there, I think.
I've learned so much. I may have told you personally this story before, but in 2013, I went to Worldcon.
Yeah.
And one of the panels that I went to go see was, and this was before Pennsylvania even came out. One of the panels I went to see was how to sell your novel to Hollywood, or how to sell an option on your novel, I think was the name of the panel. And so it was pretty packed. And the panel, I think there were six or seven panelists, and one of them was the lady who wrote the books that became the vampire Southern Vampire series that was on HBO.
Oh yeah, the True Blood.
True Blood, right? And
Sookie Stackhouse.
Yeah, Stackhouse. Yeah. And so she was on there, and she's the one I remember. But everybody on the panel had sold an option at some point, or several. One guy I think had sold 12 options, and they had not had a picture or a TV show made yet. But
yeah.
I remember sitting back in the room, and there was this like feeling, there was like a spirit in the room. These people were like, "We're going to get the secret."
Yeah.
Secret of how you sell an option on your novel. And so they started off, and they started going down the panel, and everybody, they were like, "Okay, how did the whoever bought the option, how did they find out about your book? And so they each told their story. Well, each one of the stories is almost identical to mine.
Right.
It was like there's something different about all of them, but like in the one with the vampire stories, the director had gone to get his haircut in Hollywood somewhere, and they said it's going to be 45 minutes before we can get you in. So he walked down the road a little bit. There was a bookstore. He walks in. There's the book. It's face out on the shelf. He looks at it. He's like, it's interesting. He calls his agent or somebody and says, see if the option's available. Bam, she sells an option. And the spirit kind of murmurs in the room. And then the next guy's like, yeah, somebody sent my book to somebody and their cousin got it. And their second cousin was a assistant PA on a film or something. And so it was this torturous route that the book went. So the bottom line was that there was some level of what they call luck.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody was just like, oh, well, I just sent my book to this instant company that punched a button and then they sold it. You know, that's the how the people want to know, how do I do it? And so and people were getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And these people were standing up all, we don't want to hear luck stories. We want to hear how do we sell an op. That's the name of it. And this one guy goes, well, you know, yes, there's some what you call luck involved, but that lady's book was in that bookstore.
Right.
And it was face out on the shelf. That's not luck, you know, that certainly that's a part of it. But, you know, in my story with Pennsylvania, this was November 2015. So go back a month. She was getting on a plane to fly somewhere. And she said, you know, I'm going to look for options that are available. I think at that time, probably wool had just sold, or one of those, Matthew Mather, or somebody had just, maybe A.G. Riddle, somebody, maybe it was Wool, had just sold an option. And so she was thinking, indie, sci-fi, let's find out what's hot. She went to Amazon, she looked, and Pennsylvania was number 3 on Amazon sci-fi. And so she read it on the plane. She loved the book. She wrote me a little card. It was like a, I don't know what you call it. It was just a little card. And it said, I guess she thought I was like hardcore Amish. And she was like, I don't even know if you'll get this or if you have the ability to contact anybody or anything. But if you have the technology to respond, I would like to know if the option is available on this book. And of course, I had an agent at that time, and I just took the card and I took my phone and took a picture of the card and immediately sent it to my agent. And he called her and we ended up selling the option. But, you know, so someone could say, well, you know, this producer just happened to come across, but you know, it was number 3 on all of Amazon. And so, you know, that's not that it wasn't just, you know, I didn't fall over into a hole.
You did all the work. You did was in advance. Like you did the work of getting it in that position where she would be able to find it.
Yeah, and so there may have been thousands and thousands of people before and since then who have been number 3 on Amazon at any particular time that didn't happen to. But
right. You
know, that's how it happened. And so,
I mean, at one point I had a number 1 book on Amazon and I didn't get a movie deal out of it. So it's not, there is still going to be a component of luck.
Well, yeah. And that's never not going to be there. And there's also, if there was like 3 steps, if Kevin Tomlinson can write the 3 steps to get your book sold as an option, everybody would do it tomorrow. Yeah. Everybody would sell an option and those would be worthless.
Yeah. All the rules would change.
Well, yeah, it's like you can't make all those movies, and they're not going to. And so there is no easy button. It's just what happened. And
right.
But it's been a you know, I think I started off jaded and cynical. I think I started off kind of knowing what was going on, what Hollywood might do to it. The first couple of drafts, especially, so I was writing the original script. And pretty early on, it went kind of away from the book. And so they had hired a script doctor who started making some suggestions that were interesting. It was an interesting story. And so, like Jim Butcher says, it was kind of like an alternate universe version of my book.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still liked it. I liked the story, but it really wasn't the book.
Did your book ever at any time get called out as being Witness meets The Martian? Because that's how I'm describing it.
That's fantastic. I have almost everybody use Witness.
Yeah, because it's the only Amish movie we know.
Right, right. And it's the best one so far.
It is the best one so far, yeah.
No, I think I've heard Witness meets Star Wars and Witness meets a few other ones, but I think that's actually fantastic. So, you know, it was like I was writing the first script, and it went south pretty fast. I mean, it was basically an alternate version. And then when I got fired as a screenplay writer, and I say that a little bit jokingly, the way they fire you is when you're the author, is they contact you and they're like, "We have great news.
You're not going to have to write this script."
No, the great news is that the process is going forward.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing you really know during this 3 years that I've gone through where as long as it's moving, as long as something, what you don't want is a 2-3 month window where nobody says anything, because that's generally where it just dropped off everybody's radar.
Right. Right.
So, you know, so her point was, hey, great news. This thing's moving forward. And it was this contingency thing where she was talking at that time. I don't know if I might be able to mention his name. Probably not. There was a big name director at that time that was very, very interested and had gone through several readings and had said, you know, I think I might want to do this, but I would like to have a big name or a well-known name or a professional screenwriter write the screenplay. So it was more about the name. And so that's what she's like, you know, in order for this thing to take the next step, we're going to go get a screenwriter. And so that's when I was kind of fired, but it was a good news. It was a good, the good news is that the thing was moving forward. And then he ended up, after, I don't know, it was months that we were pretty sure he was going to attach, he ended up not doing it.
Yeah.
And so, it turned out to be great. If I had to pick from anybody that I want to make this movie, Patrick Tatopoulos, the director, is the one that I think his eye and his vision, even on movies that perhaps aren't in my wheelhouse. You know, I'm not a big werewolves versus vampires guy.
Yeah.
But I watched that Rise of the Lycans, and he filmed a lot of it in New Zealand with the beautiful, just cinematically fantastic. And I just think he's the perfect guy for it. So, and what happened then was they ended up hiring the current screenwriter, which is Anne Seigel.
Seigel, yeah.
Yeah. And she has award-winning, and I've read several of the scripts, and it's really, really, and she went directly back to the book. So it's very, very, very close to the book now, which kind of, to me, was another saving grace of the whole thing. So I'm pretty excited about it right now where it is.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's generally going to be exciting anyway, because it is sort of when you start this business, I mean, we start writing books, one of those things in the back of your head is this might be a movie someday. I kind of got to a point where it's not as exciting to me. The concept of it being a movie isn't as exciting to me anymore, mm-hmm. only because I've worked in film and TV.
Right.
But it is still a big, huge deal.
It's a big deal. And, you know, to see, I give you The Martian, for example, it's become a part of our culture. You know, it's part of the language.
In a way that books these days really don't really come around that way. Like, you know, now you've got The Martian is a pop culture reference now.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been had it only been the novel.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, if I meet somebody and I say, "Hey, do you know about The Martian?" They're referring to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that type of thing is pretty exciting. You know, with Pennsylvania, first of all, everybody says, especially in Hollywood, you know, they say, of course, everything's reboot, reboot. Everybody's, oh, but we're looking for this new, fresh thing.
Right.
We're looking for this newest, freshest thing. And so I, for years, I was like, I'm a sci-fi.
How much newer can you get?
Well, people don't realize this. You might have seen, I think you and I might have talked about it, but Witness came out, I think, in 1985.
Yeah.
And was made for $25 million.
Yep.
And I think it made $174 million in 1985, which would be a massive blockbuster today.
Right.
And they have not made a serious Amish film anywhere near that scale since 1985. And so to me, it seems like there's a lot of money on the table if somebody would go out there and actually capture that visual contrast. The contrast in The Witness was between this pacifistic, very beautiful, ordered Amish country and this ultra violence and the scary men who do death. And so with Pennsylvania, it's more like a contrast between that Amish plain, non-technological, ordered society and the high technology of robots and drones.
Right.
And you know, interstellar colonization. And so I think it's a magic combination for the cinema. Now you were mentioning that, you know, authors can go, oh yeah, I think everybody, especially when they start, they go, oh yeah, I would love to have my book made into a movie. And also you have readers,
right,
who are visual, who read your books and they're like, oh, this would be a fantastic movie, because they're able to see it visually.
Right.
And now I have always, even when I was just teaching, I've always been a visual person. So all of my books, to me, in my head, are written to be a movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what, I can only know what's in my head. I don't know how anybody else writes, but
right,
see as a movie. And so that world of Pennsylvania has always been very cinematic to me in my head. So, you know, a lot of times, like when the screenwriter would portray something early on, I would go, that's not the way I saw it.
Yeah.
Not the way I saw it in my head. But then I think about it and sit back and read it. I'm like, wow, that's really, really good. That's a really good image that I, it's not the way I saw it, but it's probably the way most people might have seen it.
You think you'll have any trouble if the screenwriter goes off into left field with it? Will that give you any heartburn?
I think I dealt with that early on. I think early on it would have, but I think I've dealt with it since then. I think it was Hemingway that said, you know, the best thing you can do is drive to California with your book and throw it over the wall, throw the money back over, take the money and go home.
Yeah.
I'm not quite, I've been blessed in that Stacey Jorgensen, who's the producer, and I tell you what, without her, and I do want to give authors advice on this, without her, this thing would never be made.
Yeah.
It just, her stick-to-itiveness, her passion for it from the very beginning, she has never even waned a little bit about the fact that one way or another, she was going to get this movie made.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why it is where it is. She communicates that passion to everybody that she pitches the book to. She's pitched the book at ACM, at Sundance, at Cannes. She's pitched it at Sony and Lionsgate and you name it. And she's so passionate about it that you can't hardly really not pick up on that.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that she's kept me involved, even on the minutia, from the very beginning. You know,
that's good.
There's been,
that's unusual.
Yeah. There's been almost nothing that she hasn't included me in, even script talk and things like that. Not that I have anything to do with who gets cast or anything like that, but she did. I sent her, my daughter, my 15-year-old daughter, wrote a casting list.
Oh, okay.
I sent it to her and she's like, oh, these are fantastic. So you never know, but I mean, that's the kind of thing. She's always been willing to listen if I've made suggestions. And most of the time, like you said, it's not like that. So that's been great.
I will say you have a much better now. You have a much better IMDb credit than I have, because even on the stuff that I produced, none of that stuff showed up on IMDb. But I played gluttony one time in a in a anime film, and now I'm marked with that forever.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, with, to be able to stretch like that to a role so completely foreign to you.
I'm going to ignore that.
That's not an acting chops right there.
So, no, we're moving on. So speaking of all of projects, I mean, you and I are we're kind of kicking something around. We can't talk much about it, but
how exciting. About it at all. Very exciting. In fact, I thought about doing something with you or wanting to do something with you for quite a while. And going back probably a year or so. And I've had so many open projects.
Yeah.
I can work pretty quickly and I can get stuff out, but it seems like I've gotten kind of into some projects that have turned into my Winds of Winter.
And, yeah.
And at the same time, you know, because of Pennsylvania particularly, but some other things, some opportunities that were, where at least doors are open to listen to some things. And so I had been thinking about a couple of different projects. I really like the genre that you work in. It's a little different from mine, but I really like it.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that you're able to write quality stuff as quickly as you do. And so, yeah, I contacted you out of the blue not long ago with an idea. And I think we're going to do something.
I was pretty excited too. And you know, and I told you this too, cause like I get people approach me about co-authoring and co-creating things all the time. And there are some out there that I definitely 100% I am going to work with, but, you know, there's always some reason why it can't get off the ground. And frankly, a lot of times I sort of stall and don't, I drag my feet or whatever so that it'll fall out because they're just some projects like the people. I love the people, but right. I can't see creating with them. But I definitely think you and I are going to have a lot of fun with this one. I'm looking forward to it. That's as much teasing as we can do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I've done a lot of co-writing projects. And so I've written with Nick Cole and Kevin Summers and Chris A. Walt and a few other people. And a lot of times those have been exciting, and a lot of times those have been very, very nerve wracking.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I've ever been paired with somebody that can pump out stuff like you do, and like I do, but like I'm capable of doing. And
yeah.
And to have fun doing it would be.
I think it'll be fun. I worry. My big worry for us is that because we're both going to want to not piss on each other a little or anything, you know, we don't want to step on each other's toes or you know, whatever. So that's what, like when Nick Thacker and I first co-authored a series together, we were very cautious around each other and it kind of showed in the first couple of books. And then you could tell we clicked and got it together and really cranked it out. So I think you and I will probably be like that. I think we're going to be just fine.
Well, it's good when you can have two people that, like, I work with Nick Cole, who's, to me, is one of the best writers of our generation as far as being able to put out good quality content that's just fantastic writing. And he was fun to work with because we're both pretty strong-headed and imaginative guys, but he's on a whole other plane.
Yeah.
Coming up with stuff, so you'll never know what's coming in, and with the exception of that, he wanted to name almost every character Tim. I think we had in the first draft he sent me, I think we had 5 Tims.
Yeah.
And so I giving him a hard time, I messaged him and I said, hey, this is great, Nick. I just wanted to mention that this is the 5th Tim that you've introduced into the story. He goes, well, name that one Tom.
Tom.
Draft, everyone's name.
I need to get Nick on this show.
I've
threatened to a few times. I think I've even asked him, and he was tied up with something. But I need to get him on the show.
You need to get him on there for sure. He's not only funny and delightful, but he's a character.
Yeah. I'm not on Facebook as much anymore, but I was always tracking him on Facebook. We were kind of buddies. A little bit, not like me and you, but we were, you know, we batted back and forth. I need to get him on. That'd be a fun one.
Yeah.
All right, man. I mean, we're at time, which is unbelievable. It seems like I just pushed record a few seconds ago, but I am really excited about Pennsylvania. I can't wait. I cannot wait. Like I'm really surprised that it's got a 2020 release date. I know that could change at any second, but it shows some real optimism on the part of the people producing this thing.
Absolutely. In fact, yeah, I told my wife they don't generally like you to put overly optimistic dates on there, because by changing that date, you actually change the order in which things appear in search menus. And so
yeah,
I think they're very optimistic about it. Based on some of the open doors we have, I think it's completely doable. I think it's very likely to happen. So I'm excited as you are, and hopefully at some point we'll be able to sit down and watch the movie.
Yeah, man, we're going to have to do – I want to come to your red carpet, man.
Yeah, we're planning on doing one in Austin.
Okay, all right. I can make Austin easy, man. That's like 2 hours. I can do that.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fun party.
All right, cool. That'll be sweet, man. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm very excited for you. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find that book and everything else you're working on?
And you can find anything about me at michaelbunker.com. Of course, I'm on Amazon. Just do a search on Michael Bunker. Everything's there too. If you sign up for my newsletter, which you can do at michaelbunker.com, you get free stuff, free books, and get emails from me every once in a while. Very rarely. I think I put out 2 since October, so it's not like I'm gonna bomb your email box.
We gotta work on that. We gotta get you gotta get more emails out, man.
I gotta do it.
We'll work on that. All right. Okay. And everybody listening, if you had any trouble, there was maybe a glitch, or you were driving or whatever, you can find that website plus more at wordslingerpodcast.com. Look for the show notes for this episode. And Michael, man, thanks a lot for being on. I really appreciate it. I always have a good time talking to you. So
thanks for having me, buddy.
Okay, everybody. Right now, you are probably hearing the groovy bridge music. You may dance and place it well. And if you stick around, I'm sure to say something wise and profound after the break. So we'll see you there.
Hear your book the way it was meant to be heard. With a fully custom soundtrack based on your material. An album of music that perfectly fits your characters, your settings. Hear your book today. SonataInscribe.com.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Michael Bunker. I always love talking to Michael. We had a great conversation while I was in St. Louis, where he reached out to me about our joint project. So I wish I could tell you more about what that is, but stick around. You're going to hear plenty about it over the next year or so. That's a collaboration. I don't do a ton of collaborations. For a good reason, but I've got some folks that I really am excited about doing some stuff with. I'm going to pull my act together and do the project with Roland Denzel, which isn't necessarily a creative project, but it should help you out a little. I've got some stuff on the board with Ernest Dempsey. I got some stuff on the board with Nick Thacker. So I've got my little cadre of bros that I'm going to collaborate with. These are all part of my elite. I'm excited about it, but I do actually end up turning down a lot of offers to collaborate on things, largely out of time. I don't have time. But also because it's sometimes it's just not the right project. So I guess my afterword here is, not everything is worth pursuing. Not every project is worth pursuing. So you're going to need to look at an offer, look at an opportunity, use your brain and consider, does this move me forward on my goals? Does it meet my, if I have a mission statement, which you should, does this meet my mission statement? Does this produce in the world the effect that I want to have on the world? Does this further me toward my mountain? If it doesn't, don't choose that. If it does, even if there are other offers that might be more lucrative, this might be the one to go with. If it moves you toward your goal rather than away,
and get you there faster than even a more lucrative opportunity elsewhere, then you should consider it very strongly. That's my advice. So maybe that didn't make sense. I'm not sure. You let me know. You can email me at, if you go to wordslingerpodcast.com, click on contact. You can email me there. You can also reach out to me on social media at Kevin Tumlins on Twitter, Kevin.Tumlinson on Facebook. I don't even remember anymore. Search for my name. You will find me on whatever platform you're on, except Pinterest. Oh, no, you'll find me on Pinterest, too. I don't know how to use Pinterest yet. I mean, I know how to use it. I don't know the best way to use it. So anyway, check me out everywhere. Make sure you are subscribing to this show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. I'm on Spotify. So wherever you're listening to, actually, I listen to a lot of podcasts on Spotify now. Not every podcast is on Spotify, but I think I prefer it over the Apple podcasting app. And I know Stitcher is very popular. I tried Stitcher for a while and just didn't take. So, but make sure you're subscribing. And, of course, subscribe on YouTube if you would. And I encourage others to do so as well. I'm trying to grow that audience. It's a little different. I need to probably rethink my strategy on YouTube. So I'm open to suggestions. I've had a lot of people, including Joe Russo, give me some really great tips on things I could probably do a lot better. So we'll see. So that is it for this week in Wordslinger Land. I hope you got something really inspiring and useful out of this interview with Michael Bunker. I love this guy, and I can't wait to see what we produce together. So that's it for today's episode. Take care of yourselves out there. God bless you. And I'll see you all next time. Wordslinger.